Welcome. This is William Evans, and you're listening to Shifting Gears. Our guest today is Larry Gottlieb, a local author and longtime resident of the Roaring Fork Valley. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you.
By way of introduction, I should tell you that we've just come from standing on the edge of the Crystal River. And it was an extraordinary time for both of us in the sense that we had never met. We spoke no words, but we just stood and were in the presence of the flowing water. What was that like for you, Larry?
It was like nothing, meaning there was nothing going on. There was nothing going on in my mind. I guess in the vernacular, we would say there was nothing going on in my head. It was just appreciating the flow and the just exquisite beauty of the place and the rocks and the water and the river's edge. It was quiet outside and inside. So it was like nothing.
And it was a totally connected, peaceful clarity for me because I was nourished by it. I was fed by it. And it's carrying into this moment. We're here in KDNK.
Yes, for me as well.
And this is not unfamiliar for you. You've experienced this before.
I have.
And what's something that you can share with us about this extraordinary state that was a place of ease and peace, but total alertness and clarity?
Yeah, for me, Will, peace and clarity isn't something I need to build or create. It's what remains when everything else dies down. And you can see that at the river. I mean, you can feel that at the river when you are at the river and you're isolated from traffic and there's nobody else there. There's no other sound. There's no garbage trucks and all of the kinds of things we hear in the neighborhood going on. And there's just the river. That's what's left when you take everything else away. And it's a good metaphor for that inner peace. It isn't something to be attained. It's something to be uncovered or revealed and happens naturally when everything else dies down.
And we're all able to access it.
Yes, it's who we are. It's at the bottom, it's at the core of each of us.
It's at the core, and yet it's all what we're all frantically looking for when we get knocked off balance and distracted.
Well, you know, there was a song in the 70s, Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places. It's like that.
Yeah, and you're a musician.
I am.
And the former mayor of Basalt.
I did that as well.
So you're kind of evolving into a whole new domain.
Yes, and I think it's only when you look back, only when you use retrospect, that you can see that process as having been unfolding all these decades. You know, it's only when you, to use the metaphor again, it's only when you quiet yourself and look at the river and appreciate the constantness of the river. I mean, yeah, if we think about it, we can see that each water molecule starts up there somewhere and winds up down there someplace. But when you look at the river itself, it's constant. It's a constant thread.
And then the water molecule goes up and around again.
Exactly. That cycle never ends. Sometimes it's a stronger flow. Sometimes it's a weaker flow in the river. And I suppose we experience that in our lives as well.
Well, may the circle be unbroken.
Indeed.
So have you had experiences that would be fun for us to hear about in terms of this internal domain and external connection you've uncovered?
Well, the one that always comes to mind was in this respect a formative experience, Will. It took place a little over 40 years ago in the Central Valley of California. And it was a time when I was thoroughly immersed in the art of worrying about things. And what I was worried about at the time was having bought a car which had terrible gas mileage. And this was before I had any credit cards or debit cards or any of that. I had one had cash in one's pocket, and that's how one got back from California to Colorado, was paying for gas with the cash. And in the middle of the Central Valley in California, I realized it was very likely I was not going to have enough money to get home. And that really frightened me. I had visions of being out there someplace and having no money and having to just, you know, plead or beg or whatever. And I found myself with no former religious training or no background in prayer. I found myself asking out loud for help. And I heard a voice. Nowadays, I refer to it as my burning bush moment. But I heard a voice that said, "Don't worry, Larry, we'll get you home." And that voice was powerful enough to quiet everything else. And when it spoke those words, after it spoke those words, there was no, again, to use that phrase, there was no noise in my head. There was nothing going on. I wasn't worrying. I wasn't thinking. I wasn't planning. I wasn't, you know, trying to figure out what to do. I was just driving. And it was the most profound sense of peace that I had up until that moment. It was actually the first profound moment of peace that I'd had up to that point. And I somehow knew in my heart that that voice was authoritative and that, in fact, I didn't have to worry. And there's more to that story that I wrote in my book, The Seer's Explanation, about how the car behaved, for which I had no explanation. But you asked about that moment of peace, and that's the one that always comes up when I'm asked that question.
Well, that's a very provocative story, because I was educated not to listen to that voice, not to listen to anything that came in the absence of the teacher's authority or the coach or my parents. And so learning to hear and trust, for maybe the purposes of this conversation, I'll call it the voice of wisdom, because it is trustworthy, and it's important not to ignore that, just like what happened to us at the river, we all have access and the ability to listen to that voice of wisdom. And we're all trained, you're nuts if you hear that voice.
But when you hear it, it's unmistakable.
Yes, and you either make a choice to listen to it and begin to work with that guidance system and that internal quiet clarity, or you diagnose yourself as insane and deranged and look externally for the voice of wisdom. And I would be very intrigued if you have an external voice of wisdom that rivals the reassurance you got driving home from California that, Larry, you're going to be okay, we're going to get you there.
I've never heard that. I haven't heard that voice per se since that moment. I've only heard it once. But I can feel it. When I practice just being, just doing what I'm doing without any other agenda going on, just doing what I'm doing, and I use that as a technique to let that internal conversation and internal judgment and voiceover and all that stuff, let that just die down. And when I hear it, just notice that I'm hearing it and let it die down. What remains is, as you say, the voice of wisdom. Even if it doesn't speak English, you feel it and you somehow know that what you're doing is what you're supposed to be doing, what you should be doing, and things work out that way.
And so you've made the step from a single solitary experience of hearing a voice to now trusting a feeling that you correlate with that voice of wisdom authority.
I have. That's an accurate way of putting it. And it's taken a lot of the intervening 40 years to make that shift, and I'm still making it. I don't think it's a discontinuity. I don't think it's a up until one moment you trust the authority of what you were told and your elders and all that, and then in one moment you spend the rest of your life trusting that quiet, peaceful voice of wisdom. But it's a practice. It's something that you practice over time, and you gain confidence in that voice, because when you be present in your body where you are doing what you're doing, and you don't second guess it, you just allow it to be, things work out in magical ways. Magical meaning, wow, I never thought that would happen, or that never occurred to me, and yet it's wonderful. And you gain confidence, it earns your trust. That silence earns your trust.
I would suspect that your relationships reflect that transition, and you begin to build relationships with people who are able to achieve somewhat a similar level of peaceful clarity and are seeking for the same things, whereas before we were all pretty much preoccupied and focused on money and esteem and position and degrees and jobs, and that all takes a secondary place to this primary quality you're seeking to maintain.
It does. And I'm also struck by the presence in my life of people with whom I formerly interacted on a competitive basis or a sort of quarrelsome or adversary basis. All of a sudden, I discover a kinship, a recognition of myself over there, and the relationship transforms without anything being said. And it's really clear to me that, you know, it's that square peg in the round hole. If you change the hole, a different sort of peg fits. And people show up with that fit, either people that you've known before who are now able to fit with you, or some people drift out of your life and others show up.
This is William Evans. I'm speaking with Larry Gottlieb. He lives here in Carbondale and is the author of The Seer's Explanation. And we're talking about peace and clarity. So how is this manifesting in your life this week?
I am at a point in my life where I am divesting myself of stuff and moving from a 3,000 square foot house, more or less, to a vastly smaller space with someone I adore. And I can feel my attachment to the things that filled up that 3,000 feet. I can feel it surface, and I can see myself having a choice to empower that attachment and say, I'm not giving this up no matter what, and saying, it's just an attachment. I can let that go. And will it fit in the new house? Yes. Okay. Well, then I have a choice. Will it fit in the new house? No. Well, okay. Then it's not going with me. And there's a peacefulness about making those choices that would not have been there before. It would have been a struggle before. That's what's going on this week. Last week, or last month, actually, it was more about gaining the approvals to build this new little home that she and I will inhabit. And as you alluded to before, I was mayor of Basalt. I have some familiarity with the wheels of government on a local, small local level. And we went through that process. We experienced that process here in Carbondale, and it was wonderful to watch real people balancing code requirements with the obvious value of the project that we had brought before them that required some variances, and just be there in that room and allow people to get wherever it was they were going. And lo and behold, we got the approvals to do what we want to do, even though some people had said, you're never going to get to do that.
All right. Well, you kind of alluded to something relevant to this, and it was talking about competition and contest behavior. And I would gather that probably when you went into those meetings for the I assume, zoning variance, that you had not carried in a bag with your agenda, but you were able to play in that field and listen so that people could voice their perspective without defending or attacking. And you had a presence that they could respect, and that this guy's not here to try and pull a fast one on us. He's going to live here for a long time.
Yes, and actually that's one of the criterion that was voiced. That's one of the criteria that was voiced in that meeting, was we want people to live out the later years of their life in Carbondale and not move to Rifle or Grand Junction or someplace, but make it possible for people to alter the way they earn a living and the way they run their lives, and make it work in Carbondale, in downtown Carbondale, which is what we're doing. We went into those meetings feeling confident that we had, well, first of all, we had all the neighbors, anybody within sight distance of the place that we're planning to build now, over for wine and cheese and questions and answers. And we wanted to make sure that all of our neighbors understood what we were trying to do. And every single one of them signed a letter saying, we love this project. So we felt very confident that we were doing something that the town would appreciate as well as we. And yes, there were legal and code hurdles to go through or over, and we were confident enough to let the process unfold. And as you say, not defend or argue or try to convince, but just let it play out. And it played out perfectly.
That's an incredible story, because if I can summarize what I understand, you are operating as much as possible, not 100%, but in a place of what we would call peaceful clarity to access the voice of wisdom, all very touchy-feely, fuzzy stuff that's suspect, and proceeded to conceive some kind of a housing vision with you and your partner, and then manifest it through the whole bureaucracy of government. And I know from your book that you had some rather cynical comments to make about the process of government in your earlier days and position of authority, and yet change your vision and everything changed.
Yeah, you know, I left the mayorship in Basalt over 20 years ago, and it's clear to me looking back again in retrospect that when I was in that chair, I didn't know about the voice of wisdom. I didn't really grasp that there was a clarity and a knowing what the appropriate thing to do was, not only within me, but within everybody else. And in that meeting room in Carbondale Town Hall last month, it was clear to me that that voice of wisdom, which is not the voice of reason, and it's not the voice of rationality. Those things are all different. I knew that the voice of wisdom was present within every person in that room, and so it was just a matter of letting go and letting the process unfold.
I suspect you're not unlike me in that you were trained to be a competitor, to play in some kind of a contest realm, whether it was athletics or academics or artistic endeavors. But it's interesting to me that the town said to you or communicated in some way, we want people to grow old here, because there's something that happens as we get a little bit older where we're not dominated by that competitive agenda we were fed and had to spit back in our words and our behavior, that's very important and needed for the young people that are moving into town that have got all this juice and adrenaline and aggressiveness to change it, because there's a wonderful saying, don't try and change Carbondale, let Carbondale change you. And if you can spend a little time down by the river, you can wake up.
Yeah, it's no accident that Carbondale has a river that's accessible to all of us and places where one can go sit or stand by the river and allow the river to infuse one with the simple beingness and the simple presence without trying to be something else that the river affords us. I have made it a point to be nurtured by that. You know, there's a lovely little park that begins down by the river at the intersection of Oak Run Drive and Wald Drive. And there's a rusted old Model T down there. And there's also a bench. And that bench is just perfectly placed. And when you sit on that bench, you're there with the river, and for me, it's an ideal place to just be. Just slow down, and just be. And you take that slow down be, and you go back up to the street, and suddenly the street's nicer. And the people who show up are smiling and friendly, and what's that about? That's a good question. You know, what's the relationship between taking some moments to just be and then coming among a few people and noticing how smiling and friendly they are? Where's the cause and effect in that? I think that's a good question.
Part of it is we are mostly water. And so when we allow ourselves to come into the resonance of a naturally traveling river that hasn't been dammed or manipulated or restructured or redeveloped to fit another agenda, then we benefit from the natural resonance and connection we have with all creation. And it is very precious. And that's why I think so many people are involved with protecting Thompson Divide. And I think it's why we want to protect the Crystal River in its natural state and not try and turn it into anything else. I love to kayak, but there are places downstream and even in the Roaring Fork Confluence area, which would be a good kayak park. But that's not what goes on along the stretch of river that you're talking about, because that's where we go to remember who we are and why we came.
That's what I do.
Thank you, Larry.
You're welcome, Will.
This is William Evans. I've been talking with Larry Gottlieb. This is KDNK. Thank you for listening.